Today's reading is from Matthew chapter 15, verse 1 to chapter 16, verse 12. And that can be found on page 820 of the Pew Bibles. Matthew chapter 15, verse 1. Then Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem and said, "Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat." He answered them, "And why do you break the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition? For God commanded, 'Honor your father and your mother,' and 'Whoever reviles father or mother must surely die.' But you say, 'If anyone tells his father or his mother, what you would have gained from me is given to God, he need not honor his father.' So that for the sake of your tradition, you have made void the word of God. You hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy of you when he said, 'These people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men.' And he called the people to him and said to them, 'Hear and understand. It is not what goes into the mouth that defiles a person, but what comes out of the mouth, this defiles a person.' Then the disciples came and said to him, 'Do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this saying?' He answered, 'Every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted will be rooted up. Let them alone. They are blind guides. And if the blind lead the blind, both will fall into a pit.' But Peter said to him, 'Explain the parable to us.' And he said, 'Are you also still without understanding? Do you not see that whatever goes into the mouth passes into the stomach and is expelled? But what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and this defiles the person. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false witness, slander. These are what defile a person, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile anyone.' And Jesus went away from there and withdrew to the district of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and was crying, 'Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely oppressed by a demon.' But he did not answer her a word. And his disciples came and begged him, saying, 'Send her away, for she is crying out after us.' He answered, 'I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel.' But she came and knelt before him, saying, 'Lord, help me.' And he answered, 'It is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs.' But she said, 'Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table.' Then Jesus answered her, 'O woman, great is your faith. Be it done for you as you desire.' And her daughter was healed instantly. Jesus went on from there and walked beside the Sea of Galilee. And he went up on the mountain and sat down there. And great crowds came to him, bringing with them the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others. And they put him at his feet and healed them. So that the crowd wondered when they saw the mute speaking, the crippled healthy, the lame walking, and the blind seeing. And they glorified the God of Israel. Then Jesus called his disciples to him and said, 'I have compassion on the crowd because they have been with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat, and I'm unwilling to send them away hungry, lest they faint on the way.' And the disciples said to him, 'Where are we to get enough bread in such a desolate place to feed so great a crowd?' And Jesus said to them, 'How many loaves do we have?' They said, 7 and a few fish. And directing the crowd to sit down on the ground, he took the 7 loaves and the fish, and having given thanks, he broke them and gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds. And they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 7 baskets full of the broken pieces left over. Those who ate were for 4,000 men, besides women and children. And after sending away the crowds, he got into the boat and went to the region of Magadan. And the Pharisees and Sadducees came, and to test him, they asked him to show them a sign from heaven. He answered them, 'When it is evening, you say, it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, it will be stormy today, for the sky is red and threatening. You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the sign of the times. An evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign, but no sign will be given to it except the sign of Jonah.' So he left them and departed. When the disciples reached the other side, they had forgotten to bring any bread. Jesus said to them, 'Watch and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees.' And they began discussing it among themselves, saying, we brought no bread. But Jesus, aware of this, said, "Oh, you of little faith, why are you discussing among yourselves the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive? Do you not remember the 5 loaves for the 5,000 and how many baskets you gathered? Or the 7 loaves for the 4,000 and how many baskets you gathered? How is it that you fail to understand that I did not speak about bread? Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." Then they understood that I did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees.
Thank you, Sam. Hello, my name's Kev. I'm the minister of the church. It's great to have you with us this Sunday afternoon. If the blind lead the blind, both will fall into a pit, as portrayed by this famous painting. The bloke at the front bottom has already fallen in, because they're all tied together. That means that presumably a few seconds later, the rest of them are going to stumble in on top of him. It's a frightening image, really. The blind leading the blind. Are you in danger of being led by blind guides? Matthew is a discipleship manual. He's discipling us and equipping us to disciple others. To disciple is to teach or to train someone. Imagine being taught to drive by someone who's never stepped inside a car. Trained in skydiving by a person who's never seen a parachute. Imagine you're blind, being led by a guide who is blind. Are you in that danger zone? The Pharisees and the scribes were the teachers of Israel, and I take it they must have continued to be a menace in the era of the churches of Matthew's day, because Jesus engages with them a lot. He exposes them for our benefit in the strongest possible terms. Today's a long reading. It's too long. Sorry about that. But it's held together with Jesus' warnings about the Pharisees. So they appear with their teaching, 15 verse 1. He calls them blind guides, 15 verse 14. 16 verse 12, beware the teaching of the Pharisees. Now, you might think that this has nothing to do with you because you're not the least interested in their teaching. Well, Jesus tells disciples to beware. That should be enough in itself to make us take this warning seriously. The evidence of the disciples is like a thread through this passage. They are slow to learn, quick to misunderstand, little of faith. Do you have the humility to admit you're often that kind of disciple? I know I am. And that's a vulnerable place, slow to learn, quick to misunderstand, little of faith, when there's so much dubious teaching around. See, the Pharisees' teaching was intimidating, but it was attractive because it seemed keen. It looked committed, and yet it was much more about them and now than it was about God and the kingdom of heaven. Are you tempted to be more about us and now rather than all about Jesus and his kingdom? Then he says, beware. Your little faith could wander into their kind of blind unbelief. I think the way I'd sum up Jesus' beef with the Pharisees is it's just all too small with them, too small a view of sin, too small a view of mercy, too small a view of Jesus. And we hear similar voices everywhere today, whether that's through organized religion or the secular culture. The default in all of that is that it's much more about us and now than Jesus's and his kingdom. He's talking to disciples when Jesus says, beware of being led into a pit. First, blind to the depth of the human problem. This is 15 verse 1. 15 verse 1. Then the Pharisees and the scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem. This is a delegation sent from HQ. And said, why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? For they don't wash their hands when they eat. Tut, tut. Now, the Pharisees are not a collective of nagging parents. You know, go and wash your paws before dinner, you mucky little pups. We're still working on getting our kids to wash their hands after the loo. You have to pick your battles on this kind of thing. It's not that. And neither are they the government department for health, future pandemic avoidance division. The fight is not over. Keep sanitizing yourself to death. this is not about hygiene. It's about holiness. See that end of verse 2? They've missed a word off. It's slightly annoying in our translation because it literally reads, they don't wash their hands when they eat bread. Bread's like another thread through the whole of this reading. When they eat bread, in the context, emphasizes just how small-minded these guys are. Bread. Remember last week, Jesus just produced bread mountain as a monster sign that he is the Lord, your provider, come to satisfy you with good things. But instead of saying, thank you, Lord, the Pharisees are going around saying, did everyone wash their hands, though, before they ate the bread? Jesus goes for the jugular, verse 3. A, this is your tradition you're talking about. B, you seem to care more about your tradition than the actual word of God. For example, verses 4 to 6, you've made up this rule that says you don't have to look after your mum and dad financially, as long as you're going around saying, hey, sorry, I've dedicated that money to God. Honor your parents. That's actually in the Bible, you bunch of hypocrites. Which takes Jesus to C. If you don't know what that word hypocrite means, then Isaiah in the Old Testament nailed the Wikipedia definition. Verse 7, I'm talking about lip service. I'm talking about hearts that are far from me. And I'm talking about man-pleasing rules. Boom. I love it. The disciples in the next paragraph think they have to come to Jesus and say, oh, just in case you didn't realize the Pharisees were a bit offended by that. Do you think? Man-made religion can be intimidating, especially to disciples, because we want to be keen. We want to be clean. We want to be seen to be following the rules of our club. See, whatever subculture you're part of, whether it's fundamentalist religion or just the bro code, I'm afraid you get this, including in churches. Thou shalt not, this and that. Total additions to the Bible. So Euston Church, where are our blind spots, I wonder? Our commands of men. Beware the leaven of the Pharisees. This stuff creeps in. Man-made rules. Makes us more worried what people think of us, which takes our hearts further away from what God thinks of us, and gives us a totally false sense of holiness. Because when we focus Godward, our problem is bigger than we know. Just a bit of a warning, you may be cheering this on up till now, because who doesn't hate hypocrisy and legalism? But verse 17 and following is a slap in the face to all of us. Verse 17, do you not see that whatever goes into the mouth passes into the stomach and is expelled? It actually, in the original, says expelled into the toilet. The translators didn't want you hearing Jesus use the word toilet. Anyway, verse 18, but what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and this defiles a person. For out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false witness, slander. These are what defiles a person. Sanitize your hands as much as you like. Your heart pumps out dirt constantly. You see why I say too small? Way too small of you. If you think hand washing or any other external ritual observance is the answer, how are you going to wash your heart? We can put on our shiny London faces for each other. How is your heart, though? I'd be so ashamed if you knew all about mine. I mean, our culture's so far gone, it even says, look inside for the answers. Jesus says, look what's inside. Religion undermines this when it says, tick these boxes and you're fine. And we could talk about Islam. Does Islam take sin seriously in the end, is the question, if there's a bunch of stuff that I could tick off. But Christian subcultures, like ours as well, beware the blindness of salvation by our code of cleanness. And maybe that's one that would be good for us to talk about together at the end. Blind also, though, to the wideness of God's mercy. Point 2, and this is verse 21. Verse 21, Jesus went away from there. and withdrew to the district of Tyre and Sidon. Now, the Pharisees are not present, but this follows on brilliantly on the subject of uncleanness. Because if there's something even more contaminated than a disciple with dirty hands, it's a filthy Gentile dog. When you hear dog, don't think cute thing in someone's handbag walking down the street. Think skanky, smelly. That's certainly how Jesus referenced dogs back in chapter 7 when he mentioned them in the same breath as pigs and unholiness. Gentile dogs is what the Jews called non-Jews. The reason the Pharisees are not with Jesus at this point, they would be seen dead in this place. Tyre, Sidon, Canaanite, a woman, demon, Canaanites. They were the sworn enemies. Read the Old Testament. That name personifies hearts that are as far from God as anyone could be. Dirty place. Big moment. Which begins with a very human story again. A mother crying for help, verse 22. Shock is Jesus' response. Or rather, unresponse. Verse 23. Didn't answer her a word. Ever done that to a homeless person on the streets of London? Did you expect better of Jesus? The disciples just want her to go away, presumably because we're in enemy territory. Jesus is not going to touch her. And it all seems to get worse when Jesus finally opens his mouth. Verse 24, he answered, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Well, kind of true to the Jew first, as Romans puts it, but still, worse yet, when he actually engages her. Verse 26, it's not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Did Jesus just call a desperate mother a dog? I mean, it's like the anti-model for walk-up evangelism. First, ignore them. Second, tell them you'd rather be speaking to somebody else. And finally, if they do persist, call them a mongrel. I see Theo here and Yari, that we were hearing about the street evangelism the other week. I don't think this is the recommended technique, Theo, is that right? We feel uncomfortable with Jesus here. And okay, we know he's for everyone. He's all compassion. He's already healed a foreigner's child in Matthew. We know his vision is for the nations. He was the one that chose to go to this region. It's like he's provoked the incident. And Jesus will help her in the end, as he knew he would. But it's as if he's verbalizing the prejudice of the establishment of his day. I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel? Question mark. The disciples seem to have bought that assumption. Send her away. And in drawing out this woman the way he does, Jesus actually draws attention to this rank outsider as a wonderful example of great faith. Oh, us of little faith, disciples, check her out. Partly just look at what she calls Jesus. Back up in verse 22, O Lord, Son of David. Easy to overlook that. But she's nailed his identity more clearly than anyone else in Matthew so far. Look at her determination. She knows where her help is going to come from. Relentlessly fixated on Christ. She gets the dog metaphor straight away, contrast to the disciples who don't get any of the metaphors in this section. And look at the humility. Essentially, she admits she's an unclean dog. No entitlements. But you're the only helper, Master, so I'll take any crumbs I can get. The contrast with the Pharisees is palpable. Male elite, super godly, heirs to the kingdom, they think. Here, a woman, Gentile, unclean, enemy. They didn't think they needed Jesus. She cries out before him. They hide their uncleanness under a mask. She acknowledges who she is. A Canaanite woman, commended. Oh, beware too small of you. You know, the Pharisees' teaching would never bring you to a place of understanding this. too small a view of the human problem and too small a view of the wideness of God's mercy. And it's the wideness of his mercy that the next couple of paragraphs are on about as we basically retweet the big rescue stuff from last week into Gentile territory. So you're still with this? You've got 15 and 16 open? 15:29, Jesus heals many in the same kind of language as we've heard before. And verse 31, they glorified the God of Israel, these guys in the pagan territories. And then another retweet, 15 verse 32 and following. Remember the feeding of the 5,000? A bit like the Exodus, provision in the desert. Now the 4,000, we're still in those Gentile territories. Jesus has come to be their big provider too, with enough crumbs left over for any non-Jewish dog who wants to eat. All unclean. He's the Lord of all. And he brings the benefits of his saving rule wherever he goes. To the Jew first, yes. But God's vision is so much bigger. The gospel is for dogs like you and me. I am an enemy. Have I forgotten that I deserve the silent treatment from Jesus? This is Russell Brand, comedian. Many of you have heard of him, and you'll also know that he was recently accused of various allegations, rape, assault, emotional abuse throughout his career. Last week, he posted online about his Christian baptism, which happened recently. And there's a video of him giving a pretty clear account of what baptism means as a symbol of cleansing and new life. My reaction? Really? Russell Brand? To which Jesus says, yeah, he's a dirty dog, like you, Kev. No downplaying the uncleanness. But Jesus rebukes me as he says, who do you think I came for? Beware. Religion or any moralizing that narrows the problem and narrows who the kingdom of heaven is for. Because you start to forget who you are. You forget your lack of entitlement and your screaming need of cleansing. The disciples may have wanted to cancel the Canaanite. Jesus says, she's your role model. Well, then finally, the underlying thing with these guys is just blindness to Jesus into chapter 16. And in a passage of retweets, here's another one. Pharisees asking for a sign, again, not from a place of genuine investigation, but testing him, again. And again, no sign will be given, except the sign of Jonah. Repeat of chapter 12. You might want to revisit that chapter and the Easter Sunday sermon for a reminder about what the sign of Jonah means. It is a tragedy that their vision is too blinded to see who's in front of them. But Jesus departs. He's had enough. And actually his big concern in this final paragraph is that little faith disciples don't go the same way as unbelieving Pharisees. 16 verse 6, Jesus said to them, watch and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. And actually the danger that they're in is emphasized here as yet again, they don't get what he's on about. Verse 7, they began discussing among themselves, saying, we brought no bread. But Jesus, aware of this, said, oh, you have little faith. Why are you discussing amongst yourselves the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive? You guys are worried about lunch. Just do the math. 5 loaves, 5,000. How much was left? Or 7 loaves, 4,000. How much left over? The Pharisees don't have the vision to see who I am and my massive kingdom of salvation and life. Do you have the vision to see it? Or have you made it all about you again? And lunch. Little faith. We don't want to be like the Pharisees, do we? They didn't want to see Jesus. We do, hopefully. But are you tempted to focus on little you and now rather than big Jesus and what he's done for you in his kingdom? Jesus says, disciples, beware. Imagine Jesus has just created bread mountain from nothing for needy thousands, and you're saying, did everyone wash their hands? That'd be crazy. But imagine Jesus has just created bread mountain from nothing for needy thousands, and you're saying, I think I forgot to bring some bread. Same difference. Beware. I think this should feel unsettling because I can be slow to learn, quick to misunderstand, little of faith. Jesus working the power of God to bring me salvation and lead me to heaven. But if that's on a big painting in front of me, it's a tiny dot on the canvas compared to the big sweep where all I can see is my worries about work, relationships, and lunch. I'm not underplaying our real anxieties. Jesus is bigger, though. It is unsettling that disciples could end up as blind as the Pharisees. But don't despair here, please, because it's very simple what the solution is. Just keep hanging on to Jesus. It's so encouraging by the end of this. These disciples who are a bit slow, they do understand in the end. Because they keep leaning in towards him. Come to him. Pursue answers from him. Little faith can grow. Remember that Canaanite woman? Great was her faith. Jesus is so kind. He gets that our faith is shaky. He understands that it's slow. That our vision is naturally small. But this woman is our teacher. She gives us something to shoot for that's better. Totally clear on who Jesus is. Who do you think Jesus is? She's fixated on him. What are you fixated on? The word from the Lord is, think less about lunch or whatever it is you're fixed on. And I know that's easy to say. I know this is a lifetime in the working out. But it's not complicated, really, Christian discipleship. Just eyes and ears fixed on Jesus.